This is the weekly podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. This is the September 26, 2014 podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. My name is Natalie Pincham, and I will be reading summaries of articles on traumatic brain injury, oncology, functional neurosurgery, and hydrocephalus published today. Chronic gliosis and behavioral deficits in mice following repetitive mild traumatic brain injury. A laboratory investigation by Rebecca Mannix and colleagues. Recently, there has been increasing interest in outcomes after repetitive mild traumatic brain injury, for example, in sports concussions. While several experimental models of repetitive mild traumatic brain injury have been established, many have not been fully characterized in terms of behavioral and histopathological outcomes, which may be the most clinically relevant. In this study, investigators sought to establish an in-depth behavioral and histopathological phenotype of their weight drop model of repetitive mild traumatic brain injury. Young adult mice were subjected to repetitive mild traumatic brain injury or sham injury with anesthesia only. Injured and sham-injured mice underwent a battery of behavioral testing, including tests of balance, spatial memory, anxiety, and exploratory behavior. After behavioral testing, brains were assessed for histopathological outcomes, including brain volume, microglial and astrocyte immunolabeling. Compared with sham-injured mice, mice subjected to repetitive mild traumatic brain injury showed increased exploratory behavior, had impaired balance, and worse spatial memory that persisted up to 3 months after injury. Long-term behavioral deficits were associated with chronic increased astrocytosis and microgliosis, but no volume changes. From these data, investigators concluded that their repetitive mild traumatic brain injury model results in a characteristic behavioral phenotype that correlates with the clinical syndrome of concussion and repetitive concussion, offering a platform from which to study therapeutic interventions. Presence of matrix metalloproteinase 2 and tissue inhibitor matrix metalloproteinase 2, gene polymorphisms, and immunohistochemical expressions in intracranial meningiomas. A laboratory investigation by Ilka Koven and co-workers. Meningiomas are benign extraaxial tumors. Despite being benign in nature, they may show an aggressive progression pattern. Behavioral characteristics of meningiomas, matrix metalloproteinases, or MMPs, their tissue inhibitors, or TIMPs, interstitial collagens, proteins, vascular endothelial growth factors, and tumor necrosis factors have been studied. In this paper, the authors studied the MMP2 and TIMP2 genetic polymorphisms of 50 meningioma patients. Of these patients, 24 harbored grade 1 meningiomas, 21 harbored grade 2 meningiomas, and 5 harbored grade 3. The authors studied brain invasion Ki-67 index and MMP2 and TIMP2 expressions. Gene polymorphisms were inspected using the polymerase chain reaction restriction fragment length polymorphism method. Statistically significant differences were found between patient and control groups with respect to genotype and allele frequencies for MMP2 polymorphism involving substitution of thymine for cytosine at position 1306. With respect to MMP2 polymorphism at position 1575 and substitution of adenine for guanine, The GA genotype was found to be more frequent when brain invasion was suspected. Results support the importance of MMPs and their tissue inhibitors in meningioma pathogenesis. These MMP2 genetic polymorphisms, especially substitution of thymine for cytosine at position 1306 and substitution of adenine for guanine at position 1575, should be investigated for meningioma or brain invasion susceptibility in larger study groups. Long-term effectiveness of an ad hoc tailored titanium implant as a spacer for microvascular decompression in the treatment of trigeminal neuralgia caused by a megadolicoectatic basilar artery anomaly. 9-year follow-up. A case report by Peter Bansarowski and co-workers. A megadolicoectatic basilar artery anomaly is often involved in the pathological process of trigeminal neuralgia by compressing and distorting the trigeminal nerve. The authors report the case of a 65-year-old man with a 12-year history of progressing trigeminal neuralgia who underwent microvascular decompression after first-line drug treatment had failed. The whole vascular complex, including the basilar artery and tributaries, was immobile to such an extent that the usual techniques seemed inappropriate for decompression. An in-situ tailored titanium microplate was used as a spacer to alleviate compression by the basilar artery on the trigeminal nerve. The titanium implant provided durable and sufficient retraction for the sclerotic arterial complex when the trigeminal nerve was placed in the tunnel of the implant. To minimize the potential risk of vessel wall erosion stemming from the pulsating contact between the sclerotic basilar artery and the rigid metal, the authors created damping layers. Results of the 9-year follow-up examination prove the safety and long-term efficacy of this titanium implant in the treatment of trigeminal neuralgia caused by a megadolicoectatic basilar artery anomaly. This surgical strategy can be considered in some extreme cases and was devised to remedy an otherwise unmanageable condition. Using a two-variable method in radionuclide shuntography to predict shunt patency. A clinical article by Eric Thompson and colleagues. Considerable variability exists among North American pediatric neurosurgery clinical programs regarding the use of radionuclide shuntograms in the evaluation of ventriculoperitoneal shunt failure. The authors retrospectively studied 259 serial shuntogram studies to determine the relationship between various shuntography results and shunt status, surgical intervention, and clinical outcome. Shuntogram sensitivity and specificity varied widely depending on the definition of normal for shuntography results, whether tracer entered the ventricle, and whether there was rapid or delayed distal runoff. There was no difference among patients related to hydrocephalus etiology, age at the time of the study, or shunt valve type. Although ventricular tracer entry was most predictive of shunt patency, even in this context, 8-9% of patients studied proved to have false negative test results. This finding is of serious concern given the risk of serious adverse consequences of failing to diagnose a ventriculoperitoneal shunt malfunction. Thank you for listening. To read all the articles published by the Journal of Neurosurgery this week, or to listen to more podcasts, please visit us at thejns.org.